everybody, and welcome back to the Mainland Podcast. We are up to episode number 102, and I'm very happy to be here. I'm Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Joining me, as always, is Mainland writer David Rowe. Dave, how are you this week?
I'm feeling blown away, and the hurricane hasn't even gotten here yet.
Well, you're not even on the side of the state that's going to get hit, so...
Well, not now, but 24 hours ago I was.
That's true. How quickly these things do change. By this time tomorrow, we might not even be worried about anything, and nothing will be closed, and nothing will be canceled.
That would be nice.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, so Hurricane Irma is out there and potentially headed this direction, but at this moment... despite not being able to get water and a few other things, I'm still pretty optimistic that things will be all right. And, you know, we'll do our normal thing and we'll fill up the pitchers and pots and pans with water if it looks like things are going to be a little bit shaky around here. But other than that, we're just going to, you know, live our lives. And
we're Floridians. That's what we do.
This is all part of the gig. That's part of living in this climate. You just got to deal with stuff. And, you know, whether it's mosquitoes or humidity or a hurricane every now and then, you just got to deal with it. Anyway, Dave, so I guess we'll start out by talking about Orlando City going to New England, and or at least some guys wearing purple shirts went to New England. I don't know if it was actually Orlando City or not. They didn't really play like a Major League Soccer team would be expected to normally play.
It kind of looked like you and I were out on the field.
It was ugly. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. It was ugly. It was a bad performance. It didn't look like – I mean, I think we saw back-to-back games against the Crew and Vancouver, which looked like a team that was maybe starting to turn the corner and just not quite getting the results yet. And then there was a complete regression. Obviously, it was a road game, so that makes a little bit of a difference. I saw players that looked – disinterested. I saw players that didn't look like they were really happy to be there. I saw a guy named Carlos Rivas that looks like the wheels have completely fallen off of his game for some reason. I didn't think Kaká was especially good. In fact, I thought he was particularly bad at times. It was just not a good performance, and it was very disheartening. Obviously, there were a lot of players missing. Yoshimar Yotun and Kyle Larin off with the international duty. We had Chris Nagita suspended, as we do every now and again. Another thing you got to deal with as a Floridian, the occasional hurricane, the occasional suspension for Chris Nagita. I don't know, Dave. I don't even really want to talk about this game that much because I hate Kai Kamara. He scored a hat.
Oh, you stole my line. That's what I was going
to
say.
He scored a freaking hat trick, and it didn't even look like he had to work real hard to get one of those goals, even though he was the only Revolution player amongst four Orlando City players on one of them. He just looked like he was a player that did want the ball, and I saw a few players that didn't look like they want the ball all that much.
Which, you know, that's what's – the killer thing for me is, one, I also hate Kai Kamara. Two, you know, we mentioned that there were people that weren't there. You know, no Larin, obviously Spector's out. Yoshi, how quickly have we come to value, you know, his contributions? But, you know, you would think that with the opportunities with younger guys coming in, that they'd want to be, that they would be up and trying to prove themselves, and just it. It didn't look like it. So you're right. I don't want to talk much about it either. You know, add in the fact that then you get Aha sent off. Now, granted, it didn't matter at that point, but still.
It just made the end result look worse on paper.
Right.
I mean, it was bad, and it made it look every bit as bad and maybe worse than it should have. But you mentioned, you know, yeah, we have gotten used to Yoshi pretty quickly and have grown very fond of him rather in a very short period of time. Because game recognized game, as the kids say, Dave.
That's right.
So we will hope to get our Peruvian back and in the lineup very, very quickly. Because he's one of those players that makes other players better. And right now we need everybody to be better. Like everybody.
Yeah.
just not any real danger at all for Orlando City. I mean, this was one of those where I don't I mean, I guess if I went and thought about it for a few minutes, I might think of a really good scoring chance that Orlando City had.
There was the one header from Dom.
Well, okay, so
that
yeah.
Was the, and, yeah, that
all
was
right. It. So yeah, you just actually just reminded me of it. It wasn't actually a header. There was a there was a set piece where Aha had a back heel flick that sent Dom in, and Dom had a lot of net to shoot at, and unfortunately it hit Cody Cropper's back foot and and stayed out. And that was when you kind of thought, here we go again. This is not going to be our day yet again, because how does Dom Dwyer, all he has to do is basically get it within the goalpost but miss the keeper, and it didn't happen. So, you know, I think Dom is pressing very hard to try to get that first goal for Orlando City. I know he feels very, I guess he really wants to give back to Orlando because he knows how happy Orlando City fans are to have him here, and I think he feels that responsibility, the weight of that responsibility, and so I think he's pressing a little bit, and I think once he gets that first one, he's going to go on a tear, but the problem is getting that first one, and that hasn't happened yet, but you know, it was there were warning signs there before the first goal from Kamara. He eventually did score it. Orlando City didn't seem very interested in keeping the ball, possessing it, passing it accurately to one another around the field, and it was just it was very disheartening to watch that entire match, and it just unraveled further and further. I mean, when it was 1-0, it seemed out of reach, and you know, but you know, you still had that hope at least when it was 1-0, right. But then that hope dissipated pretty quickly once it became 2-0.
Every once in a while, dear listeners, we have a match where after we're done speaking about it here, we never speak of it again. Mm-hmm. This is most likely going to be one of those matches, especially when Kai gets a hat trick. So whenever we finish talking about this, it shall never be spoken of again.
Yeah, I think first MLS hat trick, you just automatically put Orlando City next to that somewhere. I was actually surprised that that was Kai Kamara's first MLS hat trick. But he had never had one before then, and Lee Wynn did a little thing called assisting on 4 goals and tying a Major League Soccer record.
Oh, yeah. So forgot about that.
You know, Orlando City, all kinds of firsts, all kinds of records, just not in a good way. just not in a good way this season. But we
help a lot of people, just not ourselves.
What do you think, Dave? We still got to pick a man of the match because that's what we do here, and we've set the precedent, and we have been consistent. So we're not going to get out of that responsibility or shirk that responsibility. We're gonna man up and pick a man of the match. Who do you got?
I even though he missed the goal, I've got to go with Dom because at least he's like we said, he's pressing too hard. It means he cares. So I don't know, you know, that or Aha for getting the second yellow just because he was trying. It's so bad. It's so hard. I'll go with my first pick. I'll go with Dom. But, you know, that's one of those you can't – there is no right choice.
I'm going to go with Dylan Powers. I thought Dylan Powers showed me a few things in that game, and he's clearly still not 100% on the same page as his teammates yet. But he really looked like a very useful player to me. He was getting his toe into passing lanes and nicking the ball away a few times. He was pretty good going forward. I didn't look at his final stats. I usually do that, and I had no desire to look at the stat sheet after that game. But I thought for me, Dylan Power stood out a little bit, and I was pleasantly surprised. And I think that he's potentially a very useful player in multiple roles for Orlando City. So I think I'm going to give mine to Dylan. But certainly, yes, Dom was one of the players that did look like he was trying, that did look like he cared. You know, there was I didn't think there was anything lacking tactically or shape-wise or any of that. I didn't think that it was a question of getting out-coached. I think it was a team that had several players not look like they were wanting to perform, and that's a problem that you can blame on the coach, you can blame on the players, doesn't matter, it's everybody's fault essentially, but it's very, very difficult to even fathom that kind of performance from essentially a bunch of guys that are playing for jobs next year.
Yeah, that's what I don't get is you know, like I said, you had guys that were coming up that had opportunities. You had other guys that, you know, maybe were on the bubble. Could be changes are coming down the pipeline. Everybody, I mean, if we know it, they know it. Mm-hmm. So how they can't be, you know, out there trying to make sure they secure their position is beyond me. I mean, I know if I'm having a bad sales month and I'm out there, you know, beating the bushes trying to drum something up. Well, if I'm having a, you know, a bad couple games or whatnot, I'm going to be, or if I have an opportunity, I'm going to be putting, you know, my best foot forward and trying to get something taken care of. And like you said, maybe it was just, they got down early but even, like you said, even before that, it didn't seem like anybody was truly interested. So I don't know. I've almost think we've said too much about it at this point.
All right, so that's it. That's it. We've got our man of the match. We've talked enough about the game itself, because any breath spent on that game is probably more than it deserves. And then we'll talk about our next thing, which we also don't want to talk about. And that is Will Johnson being arrested today as we record this. We're recording on Wednesday. We normally record on Tuesday, but we took the night off to watch the U.S. men's national team nearly blow a game against Honduras in much the same manner that Orlando City played against New England. But so we're recording this on Wednesday. Will Johnson arrested today on charges of domestic violence. And I've read this police report, and essentially what it seems like happened is that Will and his wife are getting divorced, and that's been in the works for a while. They were having a heated discussion, and Will decided he would try to record the conversation for whatever reason. I don't know. But he put his phone up and on the counter to record the conversation. Apparently, you know, the missus didn't care for that and picked up the phone and turned away from him. And he tackled her, and she sustained a couple of minor cuts and bruises, and the police were called in. And, of course, when that happens the police arrive, and there's a man and a woman, and the woman's got, you know, bleeding from a cut on her knee. And, you know, the complaint is that she's been assaulted. You know, the guy gets a free, all expenses paid trip to jail. And so Will Johnson arrested. I'm not trying to make light of this situation by any means. This is a very serious situation. I'm just trying to kind of go through what happened in terms of the police report. And it's a horrific look, no matter how you look at it. Certainly poor judgment on Will's part to lay hands on her at all. I guess it's a very hard situation to talk about, but I guess if there's any relief, it's that, you know, nobody threw a punch in this situation or used any kind of a weapon or anything. All of this is extremely serious, and I'm not downplaying what he did. What he did was absolutely inexcusably wrong. You know, if this all pans out to be true, Will Johnson should not be on this team anymore, and probably shouldn't be in MLS anymore. And at age 30, I mean, someone might take a flyer on him at some point, but I just can't see his career progressing in MLS from this point onward. Dave, what are your thoughts on this situation as a whole and on the situation with Will Johnson, who, by the way, has been suspended by MLS for now as they investigate the situation?
Well, and rightly so. You know, when you have something like this happen, obviously, you know, that suspension was going to come down. There was no way that wasn't happening. Excuse me. As far as the situation itself, obviously, it's horrible when anything like this happens in any respect. We weren't there. We can only go what off is in the police report. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, we're not going to, you know, speculate on any of that other than to say that it is innocent until proven guilty. And I'm not trying to say that he's innocent. I'm simply saying that that's the way our system works. Mm-hmm. He will, you know, the lawyers will either work it out or he'll have his day in court, whichever it goes, you know, however that goes. And, you know, we'll have to wait for more information on that. My feeling is that you know, Will Johnson has put on the purple for the last time. It would be extraordinary circumstances for that not to be the case. Once again, just my opinion. But you know, even then, we will have to wait and see. Obviously, we hope that, you know, she is okay, and that, you know, there weren't any serious injuries. Obviously, divorce is a very tough thing to go through, even in the best of terms. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm divorced, and you know, people said we were poster children for divorce. It was very amicable, and even still, it's heart wrenching. So, you know, I can only imagine what's going on with both of them and the people in their lives. So, you know, my feeling is we stay tuned. You know, obviously, you know, as we learn more, you know, the mainland, we'll get that out to everybody to read about. But it's an unfortunate situation. But I don't think that we will see Will on the team again.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I mean, first of all, he's going to have to go through the same program that Kyle went through, and I don't think that it will be as simple a matter for him as it was for a DUI. Obviously, if it's a first DUI, it's probably a pretty standard thing. You go to counseling and you answer some questions and that kind of thing. For something like this, I got to imagine it's a lot more complicated. I don't know that, but I would imagine so. I mean, this is not something that I think that there is a lot of people out there who have maybe had one too many and then got behind the wheel of a car. That's a whole different situation. Both are bad situations, and you don't want anybody to ever do any of these things. But I just think this seems like a lot more of a complicated thing, and it's potentially an anger issue, which is differently, a little bit different. And it's a shame. It's a shame. This is a guy who was brought in to be a team leader and who had been really an exemplary team leader all season long. He had been, the captain when Kaká was out. In fact, he was, a lot of pretty loud whispers that he was maybe really a better team captain than Kaká in a lot of ways. So it's very disheartening to see this happen to anybody. It's very disheartening to hear that anyone has done this, regardless of what they do for a living, whether they play soccer or they're, work at the garage down the street or whatever. It's not something you ever want to hear about, and it's a shame. And, like you said, Dave, I think very admirably, we're happy that everybody's okay, and that nobody was seriously hurt. And hopefully everybody can, get past this and go through their, whatever processes they need to go through and live out their lives happily the rest of the way. But I agree with you. I would say that this does not bode well for Will Johnson continuing at Orlando. And I don't really think at his age in MLS in general, it's just doesn't seem to be something somebody could really bounce back from, unless there's just been a gross exaggeration in the police report.
And if there is, obviously, that will come to light.
Right. So we'll report what happens. We're like you said, we're not going to speculate on what might come to pass, but we will say that, we'll let the authorities handle it, and we'll report what we know when we know it. And obviously how it affects the team is they won't have Will Johnson for the foreseeable future, if ever again, certainly not this weekend at DC United. And, that puts them behind the eight ball. They'll get Christian Higuita back. Looks like Jonathan Spector will probably still not be back. He, as of today, was not back to full training as, far as I know. From the people that I've spoke to, I didn't make it to training today because I got to work, man. If I didn't have to work, if work wasn't in the way, I would be at training every day. But unfortunately, that's not an option.
Stupid work.
Yes, it gets in the way of everything. It's just like when I was in college. Stupid classes got in the way of all the good stuff.
Exactly.
There's a midfielder they're down. Yotun will be back from international duty with Peru, but of course, maybe available off the bench instead of like a starting situation, depending on. I'm not exactly sure how many minutes he played with Peru the other day. Did he go 90? Do you know?
I don't know. I didn't get to watch that one. So.
And then Kyle Aaron came off the bench for Canada, I believe, at least in the first game. And we should have Kyle back. So there's a couple guys getting back and a couple guys that are still going to be out. Looks like Larea and of course, Johnson will be out. And it looks like Spectre will be out. And, of course, Jose Aja will be out because he will be suspended. Mm-hmm. I believe he'll get the yellow card accumulation plus the red card. So I believe it's two games for him. Jason Kreis is going to have to throw something together. I imagine we'll see Tommy Redding and Leo Pereira in the lineup as the center back pairing. So buckle up. and should, of course, see Sutter and Toya at the fullback spots. And then Igita can come back in, possibly Yotun. Maybe we'll see Giles and Kaká in there as well. And then up top. Should maybe be a Dwyer, a Laren, or a situation where maybe Laren comes off the bench and Rivas starts since he is coming off the international duty. But we'll get to all that later as we look ahead to Orlando City at DC United on Saturday, out of the path of the hurricane.
Yeah.
All right. So the two things we talked about so far, Orlando City and the Revs and Will Johnson, suck and suck. We don't want to talk about stuff like that. So let's talk about a 12-game unbeaten streak, Dave.
Ooh, I like the sound of that.
Yes, Orlando City B, the Young Lions, they were minutes away from a win, but gave up a goal and ended up drawing Bethlehem Steel FC over the Thursday. That was actually a Thursday game. They have another one tonight as this podcast drops on Thursday. It's tomorrow as we record it. And they are now unbeaten in 12 matches. 12, Dave. That's 4 wins and 8 draws. And they had climbed as high as 6th in the USL's Eastern Conference.
I will take that every single time. Give me a draw and twice as many draws as wins, but no losses all day, every day, yeah. Every week.
Points
no
are good.
Points are good.
I think that we're onto something here, that if you accumulate points in all your games and never lose, that you probably will have a pretty good season.
I'd like to go back and double check the math, but I think that you're right. That does seem to be the way to go about it. Perhaps we should have somebody from OCB talk to the MLS squad about that.
Yeah. I have already suggested that Lucas, the PR guy for OCB, take over for Orlando City and let the Orlando City folks take over for OCB and then swap places and see if the results change. Because I'm all about the social experiments.
Yeah, and just see if it's just Lucas. Because it's got to be something, right?
I mean, yeah, maybe Lucas sure has the magic touch.
Could be. I'm sure it's not just that. The coach has got them in a position to win and succeed, and that the players are bought in and trying hard. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So OCB doesn't score a lot of goals, but they still get results. Orlando City doesn't score goals, and they don't get any results. So they just have to figure out whatever Anthony Pulis is doing and apply that to the senior club. So, Dave, it's not all good news with OCB. I mean, yeah, they're going for 13 straight. They're going to play Richmond. But they're not going to have the guy that scored the goal for them on Thursday, which was Pierre Da Silva, one of their best players and one of the best players in the USL, because Pierre picked up a little naughty yellow card in mm-hmm. the first half stoppage time against Bethlehem. And the discipline panel for the USL decided that was not a yellow card offense. That should be worse. So he is suspended for one game. He will miss Thursday's match against the Richmond Kickers.
Sure, because we can't have nice things.
We cannot have nice things. It doesn't even matter if it's a young player signed to an MLS contract who might potentially be able to help this club. And, he's done a great job in the USL. And I know that I shouldn't say I know. I'm pretty sure that he actually trained with Orlando City. So he is suspended in the USL, but might Jason Christ not use him for the MLS team that is down a midfielder?
Now that is interesting, and quite frankly, why not? Jason needs to do something. So why not bring up De Silva and see if it makes a difference? I mean, it can't hurt, right?
I have learned from rooting for this team that it can always get worse. Even when you think you found the floor, the basement, the very bottom of the barrel, there's another layer of the barrel down there.
God, we need to get a smaller barrel.
It's like, oh, have you only won two games since the end of April? Oh, have you not won any of your last eight games? Have you not scored more than one goal in more than 2 months? Well, here's a nice little arrest for one of your players. You know, there's always something. There's always something that can make things worse. You cannot ever have the bottom, the very, very rock bottom. There's no such thing as the rock bottom. The bottom just, it's like one of the, it's like that, what is it, the movie 300 where they kick the guy in the well there and it just, the guy just falls forever.
Just,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it's kind of like that.
Lest people think that we're being, you know, really down about all this. It's one of those you gotta laugh so you don't cry things. So, you know, if we don't make a few jokes here and there, then we'll probably all just be depressed. So, but uh-huh. I don't want to take the focus off of OCB and the job that they're doing. And even Pierre, even though he got that yellow, he did have that beautiful goal in the 75th minute. So, you know, good for him on that one. Mm-hmm. And yes. You know, we will get him back. You know, and you know, I think the future is very bright for that young lad.
I do too. And I was told today that one of his very best friends is Rafael Ramos. And so now it all makes sense. It all makes sense. The suspensions all make sense. the hot-headedness, you know, the temper, it all is put into perspective. Yeah, I think he's going to be good. He actually, in that game, he got good woodwork. We've had way too much bad woodwork this season, mm-hmm. but he banged his in off of the woodwork, much like Giles Barnes did a couple of games ago. And it was a nice goal. And I'm just a little bummed that he's not going to be part of that 13th straight without a loss. I guess I'm predicting that they'll get a result against the Richmond Kickers.
I mean, frankly, when we've been predicting the MLS squad, we say, you know, until they can prove that that they can win, we're not going to predict a one. Well, guess what? Until they lose, I'm not going to predict a loss for OCB.
Yeah, well, we don't do a lot of OCB predicting here.
Well, we do internally.
But, I will be over at the stadium for the tail end of that game as I am going over to do the Pride game. We'll do the recap of the Pride game on Thursday night. If you haven't heard about that, you know, that's the doubleheader that Hurricane Irma has forced. The Pride was supposed to play on Saturday against Seattle Reign in a potential NWSL playoff clinching game for the Pride, but they moved that up to Thursday, and you know, the OCB was supposed to start in the evening. They've been pushed back to 4:30 in the afternoon, and the Pride will play at 8 p.m. And if you bought a ticket to either game, you get to see both, and that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
So I'm hoping for a big crowd, maybe the biggest crowd that we've had for OCB. Which wouldn't really take a lot, I think, to get. I think a regular, just an average Pride crowd would be the biggest OCB crowd in the short history of the Young Lions. And just hoping for more and more people to jump on that Pride bandwagon. Let's talk about the Pride, Dave, because they played the Boston Breakers last weekend, and they made it 5 straight wins and 6 straight without a loss. And as you mentioned earlier, we like those zeros in the loss column.
Well, you know, I said that we can't have nice things. I was not referring to the Pride because we definitely can have nice things when it comes to the Pride. wins and goals and people stepping up and, you know, it's been all niceness and goodness with the Pride, and I'm loving every minute of it. So, yeah, 5 in a row, of course, Hill got that brace and, you know, and frankly, her positioning, you know, on both of those was excellent inside the box. I thought she did an excellent job there. And you know, she continues to create chances for her teammates. It just they're playing so well. It's when we were having trouble finding a man of the match for the MLS squad, it's almost as hard to find somebody who's not doing well for the Pride. So.
Well, that's true, because the Pride have four players, Dave, on the NWSL Team of the Month for August. Four players, Steph Catley and Ellie Krieger on the back line, Marta and Alex Morgan. So kudos to Tom Sermani's team. He's got them playing really well. They played in a downpour, Dave, in front of 5,000-plus people. And it was a heck of a rain going. We had a photographer out there, and if you look at our photo gallery from that match, there's the one thing that sticks out to you is there are not that many photos because, it was a new photographer for us, Gabby. She didn't want to get her equipment wet, and she didn't have the rain coverings for equipment, so she didn't shoot a ton of pictures. But the second thing is you see the water droplets in the air around these players, and it's pretty amazing. It was really just coming down. Rachel Hill with a couple early goals. She came within inches, Dave, of the hat trick, and would have been the first Pride hat trick, and it would have been in the first 23 minutes of the game, it would have been. So that would have been pretty amazing. Chi Obogugu with another goal. I think that's her third this year. She's continuing to get the podcast bump from her appearance way back. We had her in May 17th. So Chi, congrats to her and getting that goal. And it was... a little bit tough, actually. It was a tough game, a tougher game than expected from the Breakers. They ended up getting a couple goals. Ended up being a 4-2 victory, Dave. And, what stood out to you from the Pride?
Just the way they move the ball forward. Their passes are crisp. Everybody seems to know where everybody else is on the field, and it's very I want to say seamless. It's just they're picking their head up, they're making the pass, they're getting the ball down the field quickly, and then doing what you should do is crossing the ball into the box and creating scoring opportunities. So it seems very well-oiled machine-like at the moment, and it's not just any one player. They're working the ball out of the back, but at the same time, these are not ticky-tacky passes that they're going up the field. These are long passes, so it's they seem to all be on the same page, and whatever they're doing, it's working. So
yep, it really is fun to watch them. There were times after they got the two goal lead that I thought that they fell asleep a little bit, took their foot off the gas just a bit, which is actually kind of nice from a coaching perspective, as you can show them that film and go, look, we were great for half an hour. And then what happened? What did you guys lost your focus. You didn't stick with it. And it's kind of that thing where, you want your team to play well, and then, but you want to have that little something that you can yell at
them
about
them.
And say, look, we got to be better. We're not going to reach our goals. Marta had the other goal in of the four, by the way, and that took her up into a second place tie behind Sam Kerr, who is like uncatchable.
Right.
Because she lets everybody catch back up within a goal, and then she scores another hat trick, it seems like. But there's only a few games left, and Sam Kerr has tied the NWSL record for goals in a season that Kim Little had established. But and the other sad thing is that Alex Morgan's goal scoring streak came to an end at what, five games. Mm-hmm. And she was not able to get on the score sheet, but she did get an assist in the game. So she was a part of one of the goals, and actually her presence was probably felt on more than one occasion during that game.
Well, the good news is she gets to start a new streak.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I am definitely in favor. I'm down. Put me down. I'm down. Good for Tom Sermani. Good for the Orlando Pride. They've got Seattle Reign, and that is the team that's really chasing after them. Three more points for Orlando would clinch their spot, or would actually would clinch them finishing ahead of Sky Blue. No matter what happens with Sky Blue, they would finish ahead of Sky Blue if they get three more points. If they get those three against the Reign, they'll have an 8-point gap on the Reign with two games to play for both teams. So guess what? That would be a clinched playoff spot, Dave, if that comes to pass and they can beat the Seattle Reign.
And as this drops, that would be tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So get out there, go watch the Pride.
And OCB.
And OCB, because you're going to get, if you got a ticket for one, you got a ticket for both. And, you know, have the opportunity to see an Orlando team clinch a playoff spot. How nice would that be?
That would be really, really great. And I hope that, I really hope that comes to pass. This, this, you know, the big unbeaten streak has come against some of the, you know, teams below, you know, fifth, sixth place in the standings. So it would be nice now with these tougher teams coming up to really test this team. And I think Seattle's a team they can get at offensively, but they're also a very, very difficult team to keep off the scoreboard. The Reign score a lot of goals. Of course, Megan Rapinoe scores a lot of goals. Yeah. You know, that's going to be a tall order from a defensive standpoint. The last two games against Portland and North Carolina, different animals. It's going to be hard to score against those teams. Those are the two best defenses in the league. Mm-hmm. And it will be interesting to see how their attack, since it has evolved quite a bit since they last played either of those teams, how it stacks up against them. They don't have a great record against those two teams, have never beaten the Portland Thorns, and only one win out of actually two wins against North Carolina, because they beat them once when they were the Western New York Flash last year. And they beat them once this year. So 2-2 against that team. So that's kind of a rubber match. So hopefully, and that one's on the road. So again, and that might actually be a first round matchup. So they could be going there to find out exactly what the, and hopefully they will go into that last game already having clinched, so that they don't have to show North Carolina all their cards. That would be kind of good.
Yeah, let's just get it out of the way tonight and lock this thing up tonight and be done with it. And then be nice and relaxed going into those final two games and just, you know, cruise on into the playoffs and then take it from there.
Absolutely. All right. So, Dave, why don't we get to our guest? Because we've been talking about the Pride quite a bit. And I think our guest tonight knows a little bit about the Orlando Pride and about what they've been going through, and especially about that game last weekend in a 4-2 win against Boston. We'll get to this week's guest right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, very happy to have with us a member of the very hot and streaking Orlando Pride team, the winners of five straight, unbeaten in six, Rachel Hill. Rachel, thanks for being with us on the podcast this week.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to just start out by just jumping right in and talking about that rain-soaked game last weekend in which you guys extended the streak to five. And you got things started off with an early brace and really came very close to having a hat trick early on in the game. What was the game like from your perspective in terms of you getting, you know, really great service from your teammates and you guys just all clicking early?
Yeah, I mean, we came out strong, definitely ready and prepared for that game. And things went our way early. We were just combining really well, playing really well together, and not giving them any good chance of it all. So the game just started off really well for us.
So, like Michael said, from your perspective, you know, you're getting into the box. The ball is coming in. Of course, on the first one, you know, a little bit of a cleanup duty, and the second one, just a brilliant run. What was it that you were, was there something that you were feeling or something you were seeing that was making that possible that early in the game?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it was pretty rainy and the ground was wet. And so I just know from experience that goalies are going to bobble it. It's going to skip across the ground. And so you got to be ready in the box. So I guess I just had that mindset going in, and I was prepared for any little rebound that came my way.
Rachel, what's been the difference in your mind from, you know, the first few months of the season to this recent, you know, basically really a gelling of the team. Everybody coming together. It really doesn't seem to matter if a player misses a game or, you know, if Tom changes the lineup or the shape a little bit. What's the big difference on the team this year or in recent weeks as opposed to earlier in the season in your mind?
Well, I wasn't here for the very beginning,
right.
So April and a bit of May, I wasn't here. But, I mean, I don't know. I think that we finally just figured out our style of play and who we are as a team and seeing that possession really works for us. And then when Alex came back, obviously she's a real threat for us up top. So starting to get used to playing those long balls through and breaking through their back line, which I don't think we were doing much earlier in the season. So now that we're kind of getting that under our belt and have that as a threat, I think that's really helped us in our attack at least. And then defending, our back four right now is just doing really well. They're organized. They have experience back there, and they've just been holding it together for us.
Well, speaking of Alex coming back, obviously you're having the opportunity to play with her and also with Marta. What's that been like for you, you know, with, like you said, you know, some world-class players there?
It's been unreal. I mean, I only dreamed of this day, so it's incredible. I learn from them each and every day, just try and pay attention to little things that they do that make them stand out from everyone else. And it's an honor to be able to play with both of them, as well as, you know, Allie Krieger and Seth Catley and then Monica, so many other just incredible players that I really look up to.
You mentioned earlier about, you know, joining the team a little bit late. You obviously went and finished school, which is a very important thing. What was your mindset during that time? Did you feel like, were you worried and nervous at all about, you know, maybe you were falling behind your teammates while they were together and you weren't with them, or, how did that go for you? And then what was it like when you finally came into the team?
Yeah, so I came in for a week in March during my spring break at college. So it was nice to just get that, even though it was only a week, but just get in here and start to learn the girls' names and everything, because it took me about a week to do that. So that was really nice. So it made coming back in May a little bit easier. But it wasn't too difficult. I was definitely nervous coming in, but everyone, I mean, welcomed me, and it was an easy group to fit in with. Everyone's very kind and, you know, didn't get on me for a bad pass or anything the first couple days. They knew that I was nervous enough. So they did a really good job welcoming me in.
Well, you talked about, you know, learning little things here and there. What do you think is one of the strengths of your game, and what area are you trying to improve upon?
My strength, I think, is getting played in behind the back line, so running onto balls, facing goal. And I definitely am trying to improve upon my 1v1 game, just taking players on down the line and playing with my back to goal.
Rachel, you came over, obviously, in a trade. Tom Sormani sent a couple of draft picks in exchange for you. I wanted to ask you, like, the two sides of the coin of this trade. Do you feel, because you're going to be playing Portland in a couple weeks, did you feel like maybe a little bit of a little hurt, a little resentment that Portland didn't keep you? And on the other hand, did you, you know, what? How did it make you feel that Tom Sormani was willing to give up two picks to get you?
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I guess Mark was really good about it. He called me and really explained the situation to me and how it would work out. And that helped me a lot. So he kind of was like looking out for me in the sense that he didn't feel like I would really get many minutes out there. As you know, Portland's pretty stacked with forwards and stuff. So over here, he felt like I'd get that opportunity to get minutes in and possibly start. So, and then Tom, yeah, I mean, I was honored that they were willing to trade for me, and I was excited to be here. So it all worked out.
Well, of course, you did have to make that mental switch once you were traded. What have been your impressions of the organization as a whole in your time so far?
It's really good. I mean, they treat us incredibly well here, and the facilities we have are amazing. The stadium is unreal. And so I think it's a really good organization to be in. Even though it only is 2 years old, it's only getting better from here. So it's made a really good impression on me.
Rachel, what I want to know is, in your time with Orlando, what have you learned from the Australians and what have you learned from the Brazilians?
The Brazilians are always just happy, always singing and everything. So I kind of take their attitude, I guess, towards the game. They're very intense in training, but, you know, at the same time, you can tell that they're always just having a great time. They just love football. So I think I definitely take that from them. I mean, they're also really good with their feet and everything, but I think the attitude is what I really take from them. And then the Australians, they're both really good with their feet. They see the field really well. So those are two things that I see from them that are outstanding. So there's a lot to take from everyone, but those are just a couple things from each of them.
Now, obviously the goal of the team is to win games. Do you have any personal goals or markers you're trying to hit, you know, as you play and as you develop?
Yeah, so coming in, I didn't really know what to expect. I was hoping that within a month or so, or 2 months, I would get some playing time, and that obviously happened a lot sooner than I expected, I guess, which I was thrilled about. And then once I started getting a couple games under my belt, I thought about, well, obviously I want to score, so I kind of set 5 goals as my target, and I'm now at 3, so I guess I have a couple more games to maybe get them, and so that's what I'm hoping to reach.
Yeah, and you were actually a part of that win, the first win over Sky Blue in Orlando history. Going up there, it was a tough game. You guys have had a tendency of scoring one and then giving up two against Sky Blue, but this time, even though that happened, you guys were able to come back with a couple more goals. What was that first goal for you like as a professional?
It was really exciting. I had a lot of my family and friends there, so it was picture perfect for me. I couldn't have imagined it any better.
Well, and then, you know, taking that a step further, you know, getting the brace last game. So you scored one in one game, two in another game. I know you only need 2 more to get your 5, but are you thinking you got to up the ante and get a hat trick?
I mean, that would always be nice if it happened, but no pressure.
No pressure at all. So getting back to last weekend, obviously Portland is like a whole different climate when you consider women's soccer, but to get 5,000 Floridians to sit out in the rain for 2 hours to watch women's soccer, that had to be pretty a pretty cool thing for you guys.
Yeah, it was really cool. The fans here are really great. They support us really well and are very dedicated. So even when we have appearances and stuff, you know, you have that core group that will come out to every appearance and see us. And so they do a really good job, and we appreciate all their support because it definitely helps us and makes it tougher teams to come here and play us.
Now, of course, you guys have a tough stretch here to end the season and hopefully get in the playoffs. You know, what's the mentality going forward with these top-tier teams that you're going to be playing?
I mean, we haven't really focused on the last two yet, but just tomorrow we've really been focusing on how important of a game that is. It's kind of a must win for us, so that we can clinch that playoff spot, hopefully. So, I mean, I think just making sure we're getting up and we're prepared for the game and we don't sit back at all. We just go at them, play our football and how we know how to play. And if we take care of that, then we should come out with a good result.
And, you know, speaking of that preparation, part of that was a little bit disrupted this week, moving the game up a couple of days because of the impending hurricane. How has that affected you guys in terms of, you know, dealing with the game? Is it, how did Tom make that transition, and how is this all affecting you guys coming into what could be a playoff clinching game against Seattle?
I mean, obviously, if we knew earlier, we would have maybe trained a little bit differently yesterday or something, but I mean, Tom addressed it really well with us. There's no excuses. We're both thrown into the same situation, and really just there's no excuses. We need to get up for this game. We need to be ready for it and come out like we would any other game. Forget all the circumstances and just be ready to play.
Well, speaking of the hurricane, because everybody is in this state, I assume this is your first time dealing with a hurricane, and what's that been like?
It is. I don't know. I'm not too worried yet. I guess I don't really know what to expect. So, I mean, after seeing all the news and stuff with Houston, it's a little bit terrifying. But by the sounds of it, I think by the time we get to Orlando, it'll be not as bad. So, but I just went to the grocery store today, and it is funny to see all the water gone, all the bread gone, and everyone just going crazy. Kind of. So that was different, but it's funny. I'm trying not to worry.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Rachel, it's been great visiting with you. Before we let you go, I just wanted to get one final question in. I want to know, you know, he's all smiles and jokes for the cameras, but how mean does Tom Sermonti get when he's not happy? I want the inside scoop here.
He's not mean. He's good with us. He's really good. He definitely jokes around a lot, but I mean, everyone respects him so much, and when he gets serious, he's definitely serious, but he's a great coach.
He's probably in there making you guys cry at halftime, just screaming. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. He puts forth such a, you know, like a fun and outgoing personality. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah.
But, Rachel Hill, yeah, midfielder from the Orlando Pride. Thank you so much for being with us. You've been really a treat to talk to, and best of luck, not only in that doubleheader with OCB tomorrow against the Seattle Reign, but going up against the one-time rights holders of you as a player, Portland Thorns, and then into the finale against North Carolina, and hopefully well into the postseason.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. We want to thank Rachel Hill for being with us, Dave. She was awesome.
Absolutely. An absolute pleasure to talk with.
Good interview. Rachel Hill is a good interview. Let's just throw that out to the universe right now. And thanks to Jackie Maynard of Orlando Pride Communications for setting that interview up. We really appreciate it. It's not like the communications staff with Orlando City Soccer Club has been busy this week or anything. they've had nothing to do. They're twiddling their thumbs. Dave, before we get to our Ask the Mainland podcast mailbag this week, we had a couple of qualifiers in the last few days. U.S. men's national team went to Red Bull Arena, also known as the House of Sadness, where nothing good ever happens, and other than a 5-2 or 5-3 win that Orlando City had in 2015, that was good. But other than that, nothing good ever happens at Red Bull Arena, and the U.S. lost to Costa Rica 2-0. It was not good. You never want to lose a home game in the hex. Costa Rica is a good team, though, and U.S. had a chance to bounce back and get, go to Honduras and get a result. Didn't look like that was going to happen as Honduras scored a first half goal and, basically had the U.S. on its heels through most of the game. The Flying Hawaiian came off the bench and Bobby Wood scoring a very, very late equalizer to grab a point. Smash and grab job in San Pedro Sula. And they come back from Honduras with that very important point. Now, Panama has jumped the U.S. Because they beat Trinidad and Tobago. So that sets up an extremely crucial match where?
I believe that would be in Orlando.
That's right, Orlando City Stadium in early October. Be here, fill the stadium. Don't be a Panama fan, and
you can like Panama by Van Halen.
The Red Bulls,
Panamanian soccer.
Yeah, the Red Bulls season ticket holders didn't buy enough tickets, and so it was a very largely Costa Rican crowd for that qualifier in New Jersey. But I think that they're Outlaws, and everybody are going to come down and fill the stadium and rock it for. The U.S. against Panama in a battle royale. Now, if the U.S. gets the upper hand and wins that game, then they'll have to still close out the hex against Trinidad and Tobago. So it is a chance here for, the U.S. to still fight their way into Russia, even though they didn't really have a good international window this time out. Some definite problems at the back. Mm-hmm. Tim Ream was terrible against Costa Rica, and Jeff Cameron even uncharacteristically bad against Costa Rica. And I think that was largely a chemistry issue between the two. It seemed like they were way too wide all night, and they just didn't seem to read each other very well. And then a center back problem gave Honduras a goal with a really bizarre play that it seemed like Omar Gonzalez had an easy clearance, and he just completely whiffed on the clearance, and then the next thing you know is Kyoto puts it in the back of the net and Honduras has a lead, and then you're chasing the game in a very hot, steamy afternoon game, and you know what, I want to say screw Honduras for hosting the game in the middle of the damn day when no one could watch it. It wasn't good. But when you go on the road, a little bit of CONCACAFing going on, I think, in that game as well. They went out there without Josie, and they got a result.
Well, we'll take a point. We would have liked three, but we'll take a point. And, obviously Josie not there, but we did have some players that, I felt Dempsey was his usual solid self. Obviously, Christian looked to be, one of the best players on the field. Good old Bobby Wood coming in and getting that equalizer for us. The biggest question I have is can we clone Christian and Bobby?
Well, Pulisic is the guy I was thinking of when I said there was a little bit of CONCACAFing going on, because that kid is just he's getting a beating. I mean, there was one, there was one play that was kind of representative of that for me, is that he was trying to chase a ball down from being a goal kick, and the defender was trailing him and just gave him a forearm shiver to the back and sent him flying. And it was just a goal kick. It was just a regular old goal kick. Like, nothing happened on that play. It's like, it really bothers me that, I know he's 18, but he's a star player. Star players should at least get the calls that should be made if they're not even getting preferential treatment. At least make the calls you're supposed to make. But, again, a little bit of CONCACAFing going on there. It was a little ugly for a few guys. I thought Graham Zusi was pretty bad on Tuesday. Right back, I thought Beasley had some issues, although he did save a goal on one really nice defensive play, but he shouldn't have been put in that situation. And I thought it was a pretty terrible game for Darlington Nagbe, as far as he was good early, but then after that, he just seemed to, every time the ball came to him, whether it was a bad touch or, a turnover of some type, a bad pass, he really seemed to struggle from about the 25-minute mark on. I didn't think that Darlington Nagbe was his normal self at all.
Right, I was going to say, he's not normally like that. That was a bit odd. Maybe had a stomach bug or something, but yeah.
I don't know. I couldn't stomach watching most of that game, speaking of stomach. But the U.S. is in a pretty good spot, considering where it started the hex after two games. With Panama coming up, that's going to be the game. I mean, it's probably not going to be enough. A win over Panama in that game is probably not going to be enough to clinch, but I think that if they beat Panama, they're in.
And it's going to be incredibly important, and we have the opportunity to do at Orlando City Stadium what those New Yorkers could not do, and that is make sure that it is a massive U.S. crowd between Orlando City faithful and Outlaws being there and anybody else who just loves soccer. Let's get out there and support the red, white, and blue. You know, there's no reason not to. It's going to be a big game. It's going to be an important game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm sure you're going.
Yes, I am. I'm going to be in the stands for that one. I'm making Gavin cover the game from the press box so I can go as a fan. The cool thing is here is if you make this a U.S. fortress, we'll get more of these games. Ask Columbus how it works.
That's right. And you know, we've got the beautiful stadium. There is no reason to not take advantage of this fill that place with nothing but us Yanks, and mm-hmm. just be loud, be proud, and hopefully cheer the boys on and get that very, very important win.
That's right. Come on, all you Outlaws. I believe that we will win, and that we will see freedom intensify. We will score. We will put some freedom deposits in the net, and we'll take care of Panama in early October. Dave, let's get to our mailbag.
Woo!
The mailbag, folks, you can hit us up. You can ask us anything. Could be about soccer. Could be about not soccer. It could be about either thing, soccer or not soccer. And you can do that on Twitter. We're at The Mainland. And you can hashtag AskTMLPC, and we will be happy to answer your questions each and every week. Or you can email us. TheMainland@gmail.com is our email. Ask us whatever is on your mind. We will be happy to answer. We are certifiable experts in all fields.
Mm-hmm.
Emphasis on certifiable.
Certifiable, yes.
So let's get to our questions of the week. Jacob Bynum wrote us on last week. He wrote us the day that the podcast dropped. He was a little late getting his question in, but we'll be happy to revisit. And he says, if Orlando City does not renew Kaká's contract, who should they spend their capital on, and how much do they have to spend, Dave?
Oh.
He didn't say Dave. I ad-libbed that.
Yeah. Okay, good. I was going to say, because usually they ask you. well, I don't know the who in particular. I would say that before Yoshi got here, and even with Yoshi getting here, you know, one of the positions that we talked about many times was a attacking midfielder. Well, of course, with recent developments now, we may need another defending midfielder at this point. So I would think that unless they can get a DP, level player of the Giovinco type that, spread the money around a little bit, backfill in the positions or fill in the positions that we need covered. Like I said, midfield is a big area need at this point, despite Yoshi doing well and us having him and I expect great things. But I would say that those for me, it would be, fortify that midfield. And then as far as how much money, I'd have to look that up. But Michael probably has that off the top of his head.
Well, here's the thing. Whether you spend $1 million on a DP or $7 million on a DP like they do with Kaká, it's the same cap hit either way. The cap hit is the same for a designated player. So ostensibly, they have at least up to at least $7 million that they could spend per year on a replacement for Kaká. So you can get a lot of value for that. I think Kaká largely got paid for his name and for his ability to be an ambassador for the team in some respects, build the popularity of this team in Brazil, and sell a lot of shirts. So I don't think you'll see this team spend all $7 million unless they can get someone of the quality of Giovinco. If you can get somebody like that, you have to go do it. And I would even spend $7 million to make a guy like Almirón happy, mm-hmm. to bring him in here, somebody of that quality. So I don't know who that person is. Maybe it's Christian Cueva, a guy who's playing for, I believe, Sao Paulo now. And, you know, a guy that's been on Orlando City's radar. That's a possibility if you want a name. But I think we've seen over the years that it's going to be a name that surprises us with this group. It's, you know, we didn't see Scott Sutter coming. We kind of didn't really see Jonathan Spector coming. No. We had heard of Gregory Sertich might be coming, but we didn't know who the heck he was either when we first started hearing the rumors. And, you know, and we certainly
and we heard the name Yoshi Otun, but we didn't know who the heck he was.
Yeah, Yoshimaru Otun. I had seen Peru play, and I didn't remember. You know, unless I see a team play a lot, I don't necessarily remember all of the players on that team. So, yeah, I think that it's going to be somebody that surprises us, but that's got to be the quality level. It's got to be there for them to pay, you know, designated player prices for it. It can't be a symbolic guy. It can't be a guy that's, you know, in the decline of his career. It's really a young man's game, Major League Soccer now. It's a speed mm-hmm. game. I would love to see somebody that's creative, that has a lot of pace. That not just pace, but quickness, lateral quickness, that can make right. moves and just get behind guys and create all kinds of problems. The way we've seen Piatti, the way we've seen Giovinco and guys like that do it. Heck, throw $7 million, throw something Montreal's way and pay Piatti. Bring him in here. I mean, Piatti is everything we had kind of hoped that Kaká would be. Am I wrong, Dave? Piatti's kind of everything we'd hoped that Kaká would provide, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. I guess the only thing that, you know, like you mentioned, that Kaká, you know, brought was, you know, the name, you know, selling the jerseys. But at this point, there's no reason why, you know, Piatti couldn't do the same thing. So I don't know, you know, because it's seldom that Jason goes out and makes these big splashy moves. Although if Kaká doesn't come back and they got a lot of money, you could, heck, even if you only spent half of it, got someone somewhat splashy and then had the rest of it to go spend on other guys. Mm-hmm. I'm good with that, too. I mean, you know, there's – but we need – God, there's plenty of needs. I was about to say we need more attack, but at the same time, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, you know, well, if we get Jonathan back, and you know, I feel better about the starting defense, or what should be the starting defense, than I do the general offense. But I really do think it'll be, like you said, it'll be somebody that we have no idea about, and hopefully it'll be a Spector level where it comes in and just absolutely impresses, or even a Yoshimar, who so far, and you know, I think you and I are both on board with Yoshi, so you know, but don't get me wrong. I'd love to spend a lot of money and get somebody really cool and big and you know, have that big splashy thing and lots of attention and score some goals. I'm all on board with that. I just don't know if that's what's going to happen.
Yep. Well, we'll see what happens. I feel good. I think that, you know, even if we never see Will Johnson in purple again, I think that Dylan Powers can play the 8. I think Chris mm-hmm. Nagita can play the 6. So I think you can get younger there in the 6 and move Nocherino. You know, Igita's a little pacier than Nocherino. Certainly, he's more of a midfield destroyer than Antonio is. You know, with his, if he plays offense the way he did his last two games, then I'm gonna ride or die with Christian Igita.
I mean, if we could just get him to dial back on the I don't want to dial back on the aggressiveness, but dial back on the mistakes.
Yeah, you it's know, not the, really the aggressiveness the, that bothers me with
it's
him.
It's the dumb mistakes.
It's the petulance. It's kicking a ball away and yelling at the ref and getting a yellow card when you don't.
Right.
It's really just, if you're not wearing the armband, don't ever
Walk
speak
away.
To the ref. Don't ever speak to him. Don't even put him in a position where he can give you a dissent card. I mean, just think, the guy out there that's not wearing either team's colors, he's not someone you can talk to. You can't.
Yep.
Just walk away. Anyway, thanks for the question, Jacob. I'm hoping that it's somebody really awesome, and the aforementioned Christian Cueva would probably fit the bill. We've got more questions, a couple more. We're going to go to ACM on Twitter, who wants to know is, should Jason Christ be more concerned with Kaká re-signing or focus on a more solid back line that's plagued Orlando City since our first year? Well, I went with you first last question, so I'll start with this. I think Jonathan Spector not being in the lineup right now makes it look worse than it is. I think that if you go back to the beginning of this season, we were all very appreciative of how Jose Aja was playing before he got hurt. There wasn't any bad tweets or anything about Jose Aja in the first 2 months of the season, really. So it really kind of crystallized in that Montreal game that finished 3-3. And even though Orlando City didn't lose that game, that's kind of where the Jose Aja hate really started. I think for me, that seems to be like the turning point where everybody kind of turned on him and made him the scapegoat. I think when he's playing next to Jonathan Spector, he's largely a very responsible defender. I think that Jonathan keeps those younger guys in line. And when it's just young guys out there, they don't have anyone to keep them in line. So they kind of freelance a little bit or try to get by on reactions or athleticism, and it's just not working. That's not how it works in MLS. You have to have that experience on the back line. So I would like to see Jason Christ bring in a center back. But then again, what does that do to Tommy Redding? I mean, what does it do to him? He's already wants to be starting. And if he's not starting, he may be looking elsewhere. And so you have to be willing to do that. It's like, if we pull this trigger, we may be losing Tommy. So do we do this, or do we ride or die with Tommy and hope that he is the guy? And I know a lot of people earlier in the year wanted to ride or die with Tommy, and lately we've died with Tommy more than we've ridden. but that's been that way with all three of the young center backs. So right. He either develops and plays alongside Spector, or you got to bring in somebody with Spector. I think MLS really is a league where you need veteran defensive players. And I think that if you can bring in a Spector level guy to play next to Spector, holy Ooh. Crap, you got yourself a good back line. To answer your question, ACM, I don't think Christ should be concerned at all with re-signing Kaká. I don't think this team should re-sign him for a number of reasons. Number one, they're not getting the return on investment on the field. They're certainly getting it monetarily because they're selling a crap load of shirts all across the world. They're not getting the return on the field. They're not getting results on the field. And I don't think – and you can put me on full blast if you want to for this opinion, because it's just an opinion – I don't think he's captain material. I think he's a player that all other players respect him, but I don't think he's the guy that gets everybody in line. I think Jonathan Spector next year should be captain of this team. Because Will, we've already decided Will's not coming back. Yeah, and if Kaká's not back, I think Jonathan Spector's the captain.
Okay, so a lot to unpack there. To answer the question, the question was, should he be more concerned with re-signing Kaká or doing something about the back line? I think the answer is neither.
You're ride and die in midfield.
Let me answer. So what I'm saying is we don't need to, I agree with you. We don't need to re-sign Kaká. Not that we don't appreciate everything he's done for this club.
Sure.
But if we want to move forward as a club, then, we need somebody younger, maybe a better captain, like you said. So that answers that part. Second part is, like you said, with Spector out, it's felt like there's been a lot of problems, but when he's been in there, there have been less problems. So I would hedge towards, getting in under another defender, just like you said. But if we didn't do that, we do have young talent that we can develop there. So, and I'm just strictly answering the question here. I don't know that needs to be either or there. I'm more concerned about the midfield right now. But if I had to choose between the two, don't sign Kaká, sign somebody else in the center back position, just like you were saying. Let's stabilize that back there. And let's make it so that Joe Bendik doesn't have to win as many save of the weeks.
Perhaps we would have a center back pairing of Jonathan Spector and Gregory Sertich. Wouldn't that be something? That's Ooh. Something that could, maybe that could get revisited. Okay, so Phil, by the way, thank you for your question, ACM at xstarcrunch on Twitter. Thank you very much. Phil from Twitter, who doesn't want us to use his Twitter handle because we probably couldn't really pronounce it anyway, wants to know, he says, Phil, here again. What are Orlando City's biggest needs for the offseason, and how much more time should Jason Christ get before he's fired? Dave, that's two very different questions, but go for it.
Well, I think I've harped on the needs a little bit already. You know, as far as I do, so I think we can let that stand where that is. As far as Jason, you know, we're only talking about, you know, a season and a half so far. You know, he's been bringing in people, but there's been some things that are, you know, I'm not a big believer in luck, but it's kind of hard to not, you know, see it. You know, as we don't get calls and balls hit crossbars and banging off the woodwork all the time. So there are things that are kind of nebulous out there. That being said, I still think he's the right man for the job. He does need to get his, you know, pieces into place. Obviously, we're not going to make the playoffs this year. If he has the offseason and gets people in and it comes around this time next year and we're in the same spot, then that seat is very hot and maybe it's time. But even then, it's going to depend on how it happened. You know, did we miss it by a little bit because some other team got hot? You know, did we, you know, if we miss it by a lot, okay, yeah. But, you know, it's going to come down to, you know, how it happened. Because if we do let Jason go, then guess what, everybody? It all starts over. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about it. We're talking about another couple of years before it's even a chance again. So, you know, it's, if you turn and burn coaches, I mean, you know, for those, you know, we live in the South and most everybody watches college football and we know what happens when you turn over coaches too often in football, it does not work out. And the same can be said for MLS. So, I still have confidence in Jason. I think that, you know, given the things that the moves he's made, the people, personnel that he's brought in, I think he's moving the team in the right direction. If, unless it's some catastrophic, you know, big time failure next year, I'm still on board with him.
All right. I think we've talked quite a bit about the needs, a creative midfielder. Definitely more quality in the midfield and somebody that can help the strikers score with some secondary scoring. You see this on other teams. You see other teams that are successful have midfielders who can put the ball in the net as well as their strikers. So you got to have additional scoring from the midfield, additional creativity and playmaking from the midfield that can get the balls into the strikers. That's really the biggest need of this team. And the second biggest need, I would say I would put a big need at getting another veteran center back, even if it's somebody that's only going to be there for a year to groom to help groom Tommy Redding, to help groom Leo Pereira. Both of those guys have so much upside. Although I'm starting to think after seeing that own goal from Tommy a couple of games ago, I really would like to see him play some defensive midfield as to see how he would do there. I think that, for me, I'm not convinced that a player at his age gets good in the air. I think you're either good in the air by the time you get to that level, or it's not going to happen. And well, I think in Major League Soccer, but you're going to.
I'm going to. And it's going to be real quick. You can't teach speed. You can't teach height.
Yeah, and I don't even know that it's height. I mean, you look at a guy like Jonathan Spector. He's not incredibly tall, but he's pretty good in the air. He's good at doing those little things, those little nudges, those little tugs at just the right moment, those little leans that throws off the other guy just enough to where he can win that aerial ball or at least make sure that the guy, you know, that he's guarding doesn't win it cleanly. So I just haven't seen that progression from Tommy in the air. I think every time I think I see it, then he has two or three bad games in the air in a row, and I just don't I don't know. I don't know if his future is at center back. It could be at right back. It could be as a defensive midfielder. But I would really like to see a guy who plays in the air like Aurelien Collin, but who doesn't pull the back line out of shape like Aurelien Collin. I know those guys are out there somewhere. I mean, I think Kansas City has two of them. But anyway,
we just got to get one. That's all.
So I think those are the biggest needs. I think I think this team needs a veteran center back. I think a good veteran pairing on this team would have made a big difference this year, even though the team hasn't scored a lot of goals. and of course that creative midfield, that helps the offense, you know, whether it's by extra scoring, setting up goals, both preferably. So those are what I see as the biggest needs, and we've talked about those quite a bit. Phil, I would say, how much more time should Christ get before he's fired? I am definitely saying one more window. If this team has not appreciably improved by middle of next season, I think he's going to be – it's going to be extremely difficult for him to keep his job. I don't think this is an incredibly patient ownership group. I think that we saw that with Adrian Heath. Mm-hmm. And Adrian, you know, in fairness, Adrian was Phil Rollins' guy. It wasn't Flavio's guy. So he was never really Flavio's guy. If he had been a little bit better, Adrian Heath, either first 2 years, this team would have been in the playoffs. Right. And we wouldn't even be talking about Jason Christ right now. But that didn't happen. And, you know, again, the patience wasn't there. If you go back to Adrian Heath, Dave, and look at when he got fired. Yeah, they got shellacked by Dallas. Everybody was getting shellacked by Dallas. Right. And yes, they got knocked out in embarrassing fashion. They lost to Fort Lauderdale in the U.S. Open Cup. But they dominated that game, Dave. And there's no such thing as fairness in soccer. Mm-hmm. We saw Haji Berry hit like the post like five times in that game. And the shots after halftime were 20-1 in favor of Orlando City. And it just happened that one went in on PC's just gorgeous shot. So, you know, those two results followed, I think, a five or six game unbeaten streak. And if you go back and do you remember it was like a year, like over a calendar year that the team didn't lose at home?
Yeah.
Under Adrian Heath. So it's not like he was doing poorly and he still got fired. You know, Adrian Heath had a 3-year plan. He made it a year and a half into that plan before they got rid of him. Well, Jason Christ was brought in late last year, relatively late last year. Mm-hmm. He got to go through the rest of that year as an evaluation period. So I'm not really counting that. He needed to find out what he had. Right. That wasn't even team building. That was just figure out what pieces are here, what he's missing. So he's basically had, since then, two windows. An off-season window and a mid-season window, which I think the team has done pretty well with both of those. Very few misses, a lot of hits.
Agreed.
He gets one more window. If the team doesn't start winning after the winter, you know, when they're coming into next year, if they do the same thing where they roll through the first 2 months and then just start losing and losing and losing again, he'll be gone by the All-Star break. That's what I think.
Fair point.
I guess the question was, should he be fired? And I think it is fair. I think it's fair if you give the guy three windows and the team doesn't appreciably improve in three windows. But so far he's only had two. So I'm going to give him a third. Because I think by that time he should have correctly identified all the problem areas and replaced the players that he needed to replace. So far he's replaced, the fullbacks, one center back at least, because you can argue that Tommy was already here and Jose was already here, and they also re-signed Jose.
Right.
Nocerino was already here. He inherited him, so that would be a replacement guy if they replaced Nocerino in the offseason. Second striker's been replaced because we didn't really have a second striker before because we were using a one-striker system. So he comes out. They got Dom. There's really no excuse not to put balls in the net. And it's just a matter of feeding those guys. So it really comes down to now is, can they find the other midfield pieces they need? I really think having Kaká on the team has kind of hindered this club in several ways. Despite the fact that Kaká has set up goals and scored goals, I just think consistently it's not been there. That quality has not been there from that position. And the DP situation on this team is untenable. You can't have, you know, a guy who's playing okay but not great taking up a DP slot, and another guy who's just never lived up to his upside in Carlos Rivas as the other DP. You can't have two wasted DP slots.
Yeah, when we're sitting here on these podcasts going, for God's sakes, don't let Carlos ever take a set piece again.
Yeah,
that's not good.
Can't have a DP doing that. Okay, so Phil, thanks for your question. Again, you can get your questions into us on Twitter. We are at the Mainland. Just tweet to us. with the hashtag AskTMLPC, which stands for the Mainland Podcast. And we'll be happy to answer your questions. Dave, before we get to the key matchups and our predictions for Orlando City at DC United, because this game does need to be played for some reason, I would like to say that last week I forgot something kind of important.
Oh?
Yeah, I forgot to read the 5-star review of the week from iTunes.
You're going to get in trouble with the managing editor.
Yeah, he's a hard ass. anyway, so yeah, the thing is, if we're trying to encourage people to leave us iTunes reviews, you know, leave us your star rating reviews. If you give us a 5-star review and leave, you know, leave comments, we will read them on the air. It will help us reach more listeners if you leave us reviews, and especially if they're very nice reviews. And hopefully, if you're listening to this and you're a longtime listener, then you have a reason to give us a nice review. Because otherwise, why have you been listening to us all this time?
Right. I mean, you know,
just
we've
two
got...
guys yammering. I think it's because we have the great guest. It's not because of us.
No, definitely not. it's obviously the guests, and then that's the only thing I can think of.
All right. So the other thing too is I'm not really sure which ones of these I read, except for I know we read Lee's last week because it was the most recent one. So I have to read two. So I'm going to read Goofy Red has said best podcast for takes on Orlando City. That may be one that I read earlier. I don't know.
It's worth repeating though.
Since I have to do two anyway, there was a chance I would get two. I'm going to go backwards. So I'm definitely not going to forget where I was, because the next one, gotta love the screen name, Radioactive Clown.
Wait a minute.
5-star review from Radioactive Clown, who just happened to be a guy who used to write for us.
I knew that name.
But he gave us a 5-star review. 5-star review, good discussion and analysis for Orlando City. Nice to also hear from players and coaches at times. My go-to podcast for Orlando City. So thank you, Radioactive Clown, also known as Luis, for that 5-star review. If you want to leave us a 5-star review, we'd be happy to read it on the air here on the Mainland Podcast. Thanks so much. We have 13 5-star reviews, Dave, and only two that are not 5-star, and they are 1-star reviews, because those are haters, and haters are going to hate. I've been told that anyway.
I've heard that somewhere. I did comment because I was silently laughing. You know that laugh you have, it's silent before it becomes loud? Yeah,
yeah.
That's what was going on there, because Michael was singing Taylor. So yeah.
I don't sing Taylor. I don't.
All right, well, Michael was quoting Taylor anyway.
I was quoting, yes. So if Gavin listens to this, he's going to – I'll never hear the end of it. Gavin Eubank, big Taylor Swift fan, in case anybody that follows him would know this. But we all have our crosses to bear. Anyway, it was funny. I read a tweet about people being upset that Taylor Swift was picked to be the Super Bowl halftime thing, as I digress a little bit here.
It said, but
for one reason, but the thing you're not remembering is that it's for ratings. And I thought, oh yeah, it'd be nice if somebody actually watched the Super Bowl for a change, because nobody ever watches that. It's so hurting for ratings, the Super Bowl. Who would watch such a thing?
And what's funny is the one part of the Super Bowl I usually don't watch, halftime show.
So it's, yeah, same. Because Puppy Bowl's probably on usually. Anyway, right. So I shouldn't have said anything, because actually that was an SB Nation story. So I might get yelled at from somebody. I don't know.
Hey,
probably not. Nobody.
Not that we've got any. Not that we have any problem with Taylor Swift.
Yes, exactly. All right. Actually, I don't like Taylor Swift at all. I'm not a big fan. But
yeah, but we don't know her personally.
That's true. She's probably a pretty nice person, although.
Sure.
I don't know. Song lyrics seem to indicate she has some problems with people. I don't know.
Who doesn't?
Got a lot of problems with you people, and you're going to hear about it. I know. It's a little earlier for us. A little early for Festivus jokes. Anyway, let's get back on track, Dave. And so we'll talk about thanks for those 5-star reviews on iTunes, guys. Let's get back to our show. We're going to wrap it up with Dave here in stoppage time with our key matchups and predictions for Orlando City at DC United. Go!
Okay, so key matchups. Well, gosh, quite frankly, we just need to score goals. So it's going to be even then, I don't even know if that's going to do it. Okay, so regardless of what happens on the defensive end, we need to start scoring some goals. So whether Dom gets on the board, and whether any well, Yoshi's coming back, or hopefully Yoshi's coming back. So I think here's what I think. Yoshi comes back. He comes back in halftime after half. We don't score a goal until then. He creates a chance. Dom finally gets his first goal back, and it's good enough for us to lose 2-1.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
that's very optimistic of you.
I know. I know.
Okay, well, I think I may have done this last week, but I'm going to say all 11 Orlando City players against that thing with the posts and the crossbar and the netting. That's the key matchup. They
Yeah.
must beat that thing. They must beat it somehow. They must find a way to foil everything that that net has done to them over the course of this season and put the ball inside of it. If they can do that, that's the key for me because they have not worked, it has not worked out well when they have failed to do that.
Okay, so if they do that, then what?
Then to quote Dumb and Dumber, I'm telling you there's a chance. It's a paraphrase, actually. That's not a direct quote. That's a
That wasn't
paraphrase.
direct because it was, and if I remember rightly, that was a like 1 in a million chance. Yeah.
Something like that. So yeah, no, I think if they put the ball in the net, they certainly have a better chance of getting a result at DC.
Then not putting the ball in the net.
Yeah,
That's
exactly.
that there is some solid predicting.
I think that we learned at New England that it was a poor strategy to fail to score. Failing to
That
score didn't work at all. Throw that strategy right out the window.
ladies and gentlemen, is why he's the best podcaster in the business.
Yeah, tactically, Jason Christ just didn't know what he was doing when he said, "Don't score."
Your
anyway,
strategy.
yes, tacticians that we are, we're all in favor of scoring goals.
Going out on a limb there. Going
Yeah,
out on a limb.
I am at this point. There's 7 games left, Dave. I don't know what else I can do except say, "Score, put the goddamn ball in the net."
We're a little punch drunk, I think.
I think I just got the explicit language warning on iTunes for our next podcast, maybe,
Did you?
for saying that.
Oh,
I don't know. Who knows? I
well.
mean, I think you actually have to claim that when you post the thing. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, Dave, so my prediction is 2-0 hosts.
Okay.
Yeah, I do not want to lose to DC United. I don't like DC United. I don't like them at all. I think the only teams I find more objectionable than DC United are the Red Bulls, New York City FC, and Atlanta United. I am offended by those three teams' existence.
In the past, I would have added Columbus because Kai Kamara was there, but since he's
Right.
not there anymore, then that's fine, and I'll agree with you.
Well, don't get me wrong. Columbus, the Crew came in and they were kind of jerks in that game. I mean, Harrison Offal elbowed Yoshi in the head.
True.
So
See, but
they're still on the list.
I'm from Mar yeah. Well, yeah, they're on the list. They're not making the top three anymore.
Yeah.
Atlanta came in and took that away from. I'm from Maryland originally, and so. I've got a lot of Maryland pride in DC. I've never liked any DC team ever in anything. Like as soon as they got a baseball team, I was immediately against it. So I feel the same way about DC United. I'm it just it, it, that's what the name starts with. I'm against it. So I'm with you. I really don't want to lose to them. I don't feel good about our chances on that. But hey, there's a hurricane coming, so anything could happen, right?
Right. I will encourage Giles Barnes to shoot no matter where he is
And I
against
will
DC United.
encourage Carlos Rivas to not do so wherever he is.
Because Giles Barnes completely thwarted Bil Hamid in that game at Orlando City Stadium just by shooting the ball right at him, basically. He's like, "Oh, here you go." And Bil Hamid said, "There you go. It's in the net."
And
And
I
I
don't
went,
want
oh.
Carlos hurting any fans.
That's right. I mean, we don't want that to happen. That would be
No.
bad. If you are going to go to this game in DC, please sit on the sidelines. Don't sit in the end zones, and certainly not in the upper deck.
No, because you're very likely to get hit by it. And let's face it, the man has some pace on the ball when he kicks it,
That's
so
right.
you don't want to be on the receiving end of it.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing for me is if he had just cranked about his first seven or eight into the wall, like into the guy's faces and groins, no one would stand in that wall for him ever again. Because the
Yeah.
word would get around. I mean, you guys would be having like welts and you know,
We'd
not
have
being able to.
to put up one of those nets they put behind the goalposts in football so that people would be safe.
Yeah, I mean, you just kick it low and just like, you know, make a couple people unable to father children, and then people wouldn't stand in that wall. It'd be like, you know, the goalkeeper would be like, okay, I want four in the wall. They'd be like, nope, nope,
Yeah, no.
no. You come out and be the wall, buddy. I'll stand it. I'll give me the gloves and I'll go back there.
Wait, I've got the solution. So he can take it. He can take the kick, but somebody has to, as he's going up, they have to grab his head and push it down so that he's over top of the ball.
Yeah. Maybe he needs a holder, like a field goal kicker.
Right, it's got to be it's just somebody hand on the back of the head, keeping his head down so that he's over top of the ball, and problem solved.
Maybe that's what it is. Laces have been out this whole time. The laces were in. Oh man, I don't know. Yeah, the laces weren't out at all, and Finkel is Einhorn, and I think we've now probably quoted way too many movies for one episode. We can't do it for like the next 5 weeks. But anyway, Dave, let's put a bow on this. This episode number 102 of the Mainland Podcast. We want to thank Rachel Hill, who was a fantastic guest from the Orlando Pride. Good luck to her and the rest of her teammates for the remainder of the NWSL season, which only 3 games left. It's amazing how quickly the season has flown by for them when you don't have an Olympic break in the middle of it. Thanks to her. Thanks to Jackie Maynard for helping set up that interview. And of course, thank you, the home listener, for choosing this podcast and for hopefully listening to it all the way to this point in the end of the show. We'll be back next week to break down Orlando City against DC United. Hopefully, we'll be much happier next week when we talk to you about the MLS team. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a 6-game Pride win streak and a 13-game unbeaten OCB streak. And because those two teams are in action coming up on Thursday, that's today as the podcast drops, Pride against Seattle Reign, OCB against Richmond Kickers. And
No more legal issues. No more legal
yeah,
issues.
let's stay out of trouble, guys. Come on, please. Can we do that? That'd be great. Really appreciate that quite a bit. But we'll be back to break everything down next week. Get your mailbag questions into us. Ask TMLPC is your hashtag du jour. I didn't use that right. It's
No.
your hashtag. Du jour is of the day.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's the hashtag all the time.
Yeah, it's always the hashtag. You can always use it.
Not that you can't use it du jour, because you can.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I just clicked on that on here, and there's like extra questions that we never ever responded to. I
Oops.
just clicked on the hashtag, but I think there's a chance that there are some people that did not questions were kind of blocked from my view because if you have asked or if you have used the Christ out hashtag and used an at the mainland and tweeted at us with a Christ out, we've probably muted you because I just have no tolerance for that crap. I understand that everybody's mad, but you know, whatever. But yeah, some of these are kind of old. I think there's Fernando Patino asked us what was the final word on Quintero, but I think it was just the fact that they were asking for too much money is what it came down to, and I think that the player and his agent got caught pitting one MLS team against another, and it backfired on them a little bit. So I think that's what happened there. So if you're still listening to us after we ignored your question, that's what it is. Yeah, that's what we got.
Don't not ask a question. That's all
Yeah.
we're saying. Don't
Ask
not
your
ask
question.
questions.
I'll check the hashtag next a little bit better from now on. I just yeah, there's some people that have gotten muted and sometimes it might be accidental even because
But the Christ out thing, yeah, it just sticks in my craw because it's just ridiculous. It's like, do you really want to start off over again, have the next guy come in, tear down the roster and rebuild it again to what, you know, he's probably not going to run a 4-4-2, you know? So,
yep.
Yeah, it could be ugly. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, that's it for this week, episode 102. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week to talk about all this stuff. On behalf of David Rowe, I'm Michael Citro, managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying, please, for the love of God, go City.